When I was little, I was thinking this last week about how Christmas was full of wonder and, you know, anticipation. And it was, you know, Christmas was all about receiving, you know, and like under the tree, there's these gifts. And anytime mom and dad weren't in the room, my sister and I were over there and we're digging the presents out and shaking them and, you know, wondering what's inside. And, you know, I've got my stocking at the bottom of the bed and wake up in the morning. I couldn't wait to tear into it to find out what I was getting. And it's funny because now I am a parent and I'm sort of on the other end of things. And, you know, when I was little, like I said, the receiving, the getting, that's what it was all about. And now it's kind of like I'm not anywhere near. That's not what excites me about Christmas anymore. You know, now it's about family, watching my kids. It's about giving things to my wife and other people that I love. And Bill Cosby, you know, the guy's a master communicator. And he does, some of you may remember the Cosby Show series that ran from the mid-80s to the early 90s. And he does a great job showing what family life is really like and, you know, making light of it. And he captures, I think, this whole equation of what Christmas is like for the adults and what it's like for the kids really well in this clip, and I want to show it to you.
You have to ask Mrs. Santa Claus.
Well, I want to talk to Mrs. Santa Claus. Do you have her phone number?
Yes, because adults have the phone number to the Santa Claus house. Because if little girls and boys had it, they'd be calling every 5 minutes, "Oh, Santa Claus, can I have this? Santa Claus, can I have that?" And you better just stop bothering me before I call Santa and give him a bad report about you.
No, don't do that.
Yeah. Well, then you better prove to me that you're a good girl.
I'm good.
Yeah, well, you have to prove it to me. You have to do something.
What?
Mop this floor.
I'm ready.
I don't believe this. Give me the mop, please. See, sit down and eat your ice cream. You kids are all alike. Every time around Christmas time, you'll do anything. Oh, I'll mop the floor. Oh, I'll do the windows. Oh, I'll wash your car. Oh, I'll do anything. And then somewhere around April, I say, mop the floor. Oh, but I'm just a little kid. Oh, I'm just so tired. Oh.
I don't eat ice cream when I'm not supposed to.
That is classic. Cosby is so good at capturing those kind of moments. You know, we've been talking the last couple weeks, and the title of the series that we're doing is called The Gift of Christmas, and really, you know, examining just what it is that God has done for us and trying to recognize what a gift Christmas is to us. But the thing is, Dan has been talking the last couple of weeks that I've recognized is, like I said, you know, when I was a kid, I was good at receiving. And I don't know if you're like me, but one of the things I'm discovering is the older I'm getting, and I'm sure this is just me, none of you are like this, the older I'm getting, the more set in my ways I'm becoming. I was talking on the phone this morning with a good friend of mine who's a youth pastor, and I was in youth ministry for 15 years. And, you know, one of the things that is beautiful about doing youth ministry is you're working with kids in junior hires and high schoolers, and they, you know, they're still thinking about life and what it's all about. They're willing to receive wisdom and information and think and examine. And as we get older, and again, I'm sure none of you are like this, the older we get, sometimes we become more resistant to learning and receiving and welcoming new information into our life. And see, my fear is that what happens is as we get older, we lose the awe, we lose some of the wonder, we lose some of the appreciation of what the gift of Christmas is all about. And when we do that, what we do is we hold at arm's length our ability to receive the good that God has for us in Christmas. Tonight, I want to spend a couple minutes talking about what a gift God really gave us in Jesus. And a lot of times when we talk about, you know, Christmas time, we talk about the book of Matthew and the book of Luke, which they sort of tell us about the people and the places that make Christmas what it is. So, you know, we learn about the star, and we learn about the three kings, and we learn about Mary and Joseph, and we learn about a stable, and we learn about King Herod, and we learn about, you know, the little baby, and we sort of learn about the people and the places. And sometimes I think that's where Christmas kind of stops for us. And, you know, we lose what a gift it really is. And see, that's where the book of John is so helpful to help us recognize what that baby is all about. And I just want to read four verses to you tonight and just kind of work through just a couple of the phrases to remind ourselves what a gift Christmas is. Because one of the things I'm convinced of is you learn to appreciate a gift when it's something really of value. And, you know, sometimes we measure, well, if it costs a lot, that's a good gift. You know, it's something that's really worth enjoying. Or maybe if it took some time and there was some effort and planning behind it, you know, we recognize those things as being the valuable gifts in life. And especially if they're the sort of things that are relational sort of gifts, things that we get to enjoy with other people. And see, one of the things I think we find out as we read these verses in John is all of the things that make a real gift that we treasure valuable, we find that that's what God did for us in giving us the person of Jesus. And John tells us this right off the bat in his very first verse of his book. And he says, in the beginning, the Word, and the Word is, it's a key word, for he's talking about the person of Jesus. He says, in the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through Him, and nothing was created except through Him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and His life brought life to everyone. And then verse 14, cutting down, he says, so the Word became human and made His home among us. And what I want to focus on tonight is that phrase. The Word became human and made His home among us. What does that mean? What does that tell us about that little baby that really makes Christmas a gift that ought to be something that is life-changing, not just for, you know, a couple days in December, but it's something that ought to radically alter the way we think about life all year long. The first thing John tells us in here is he's talking about Jesus, and he calls Him, he equates Him with a Word. And he says the Word has always been around. He's talking about God, the sustainer, the creator, the person who made everything, who spoke creation into existence, the all-powerful, self-sustaining God. And he tells us that's the Word, and the Word was Jesus. And he uses kind of this interesting word in Greek. It's the word logos, which is, we get our word like logic from it. And so you think about like the rationale. How do you learn or understand what something is? Or what's the proof of the existence of some reality in the world? And see, this would have fit right in with the Greek world, because they're always arguing about proofs and existence and rationality and reality. And what John does is he's saying, if you want to understand the logic, the rationale of who God is, what He's all about, what He intends life to be about, you find that in a person, not just a philosophy, but a person, the person of Jesus. That's what John calls Jesus. He calls Him the logic, the rationale, the proof of God. And so we find out right away. I mean, you think about this from the perspective, how many people wonder, well, if there's a God, what's He really like? That's the point. Jesus is what God is really like. Think about all of the things that we like to talk about when we talk about God. We talk about His love. We talk about His mercy and His grace. We talk about His patience. We talk about how God hates injustice and people that take advantage of the weak. We think about and talk about how much God hates hypocrisy. All of those things are what? They are embodied in the person as he lived and as he taught in Jesus, isn't it? John tells us that the proof, the reality, the rationale, if you want to know what God is, you want to understand the gift that Jesus is to us, you understand that Jesus is the very embodiment of all that it means when we talk about who God is and how awesome and incredible he is. The other thing that Jesus helps us do is like Jesus is the person that helps us, I think, make sense of a lot of the big questions that we ask about life. My boys love Legos, and I'm sure that Santa's going to bring some Legos tonight. And, you know, a Lego box comes and it's got a cool helicopter or a boat, whatever, you know, on the cover, a truck. And inevitably, all of the pieces of the Lego, they go into different bins, and my kids just build whatever with it, right? But my kids always want to build first whatever that picture is on the cover of the box. And so they open it up, and they spread out all the pieces. And the key to being able to make sense of all these different little pieces that are scattered out all over the place is what? It's the directions, right? That's what gives guidance and understanding. It helps you understand how the pieces fit together. And see, that's another part of what Jesus is. He helps us understand what life is all about. Think about all the big questions that we ask about life. And when Jesus came into the world, it was no difference. He came to this you know, very religious culture. These Jews, they had all these questions about life, and they coded, you know, the importance of what life was all about. And they had this list of 613 laws. And they, you know, wondering, how do we make sense of all of this stuff? How do we understand what life is supposed to be all about? And what does Jesus do? He teaches us some very simple, easy-to-understand stories, who God is, what he's done for us, and how he designed us to live. He even simplifies that whole code for him by just saying, you want to know what's most important? You can break all of life down into two simple things, can't you? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. And the second commandment is like that. What? Somebody knows it in here. I heard it, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus helps us. It's like the instructions to the Legos. He helps us make sense of what sometimes can be very complicated, difficult to understand life. He gives us some direction, a way to navigate through all of that stuff. The other thing that we find out when John calls Jesus the Word is I think we find out something key to understanding about God and who he is and how we're supposed to relate to him. Communication is key in relationships, isn't it? I'm in the barber shop. I'm sorry, Michael calls it a salon. I'm in Michael's salon. Some of you know Michael. He goes to church here. And I'm in Michael's salon getting my hair cut this week. And you can see he doesn't have much to work with to make me look good, but he does his best whenever I'm in there. And I'm talking to him about the message for this week. And I'm walking through these points. Jesus is the Word. What does that mean? And I said, part of this, Michael, is in relationships, and to get the most out of relationships, you have to be able to talk, either verbalize or write, to be able to get the most out of our understanding about what life is supposed to be all about. And I said to him, I said, you know, I can walk into your salon, and I can sit down in your chair, and I can learn a lot about you just from the power of observation. I can watch you. I can see how you interact with other people. I can look on your wall, and I can see what classes and, you know, what the different modes of teaching and things that you can do as a result of the education that you've got from the things that you have on the wall. I can also see what's important to you. You've got pictures of your family, your kids, your grandkids. So I can learn a lot just from the power of observation. And see, isn't that true about God also? I mean, look, you can walk outside And, you know, I've talked to people today that there are people from San Diego that are up here visiting, people from the East Coast. There's some people from Europe that I met during one of the services that are out here for vacation. You can go anywhere in the world. And anytime you look at a map of the world, or any of you guys who have been to different places, you recognize, man, you can see the awe and the wonder and the creativity of God just through what he's made. I mean, it's incredible. And you can stand out in the stars at night and look up. You can see how the ecosystem all works together. It's incredible. And you can look at your own body and you can stand in awe of God's handiwork, can't you? But you notice that if we're going to have a relationship with God, there's got to be more than just us admiring his handiwork. And do you see that's what he did in his son Jesus? The book of Hebrews opens up with this beautiful line. It says, in past times, God spoke to us in various ways, talking about creation through prophets, but in these last days, he's spoken to us through his Son. God wants us to know him. See, this is the whole thing. God created us for a relationship with him. And he was so serious about that, he didn't just stand aloof and say, hey, check out what I've done and all that I've made. He comes and interacts and shares with you the nitty-gritty, who he is, what he's all about, why he created us, what the world is supposed to be like. He even explains to us, why is the world such a mess, doesn't he? And more than that, he tells us what's the solution to help make things right. See, God doesn't stand at a distance, but he enters into the creation in a personable way and in a way that tells us that he's serious about a relationship with us. The second thing that John tells us in this whole thing is he says that Jesus not only, you know, he's the Word, he's the embodiment of what God is all about, but he became a human being. And the Word in a lot of Bible says the Word became flesh. Why is that important? Well, because what it means is that God entered into his creation in the same way that you and I experience life. And part of the basic thing that makes life what it is if you really want to experience life, you have to get involved with other people. And, you know, becoming involved with other people, you become vulnerable, don't you? I bet you if we just walked through this room or you were to talk with the person next to you and you said, when have you experienced the greatest pain in your life? And some people would say, you know, some people would point to some physical experiences that they've had that have been very painful, and a lot of people would point to emotional experiences that they had that have been very painful. And all of those things happen at the expense of us entering into relationships with other people where we expose ourselves to other people. And that's where we get hurt, where people misconstrue what we say. They take advantage of us. Who hasn't experienced that stuff? The hardest things in life are true because we make ourselves vulnerable to other people. But you can't really live, can you, without entering into some of those relationships. And see, here's the thing about Jesus becoming vulnerable. Think about this. This is the thing that's marvelous about the Christmas story. If you really believe what it says, you're talking about God who made everything. He's not only the creator, he's the sustainer, and he doesn't need any help holding all this stuff together, and he doesn't need our praise, our awe, or any of that, does he? He could live completely independent of us. He doesn't need us for anything, really, if you fully understand who God is. And what did he do? Hey, we've got this little manger over here. Who knew? Jesus had blue eyes, blonde hair. How about that? Never knew that. Middle Eastern kid. How many Middle Eastern kids have blonde hair, blue eyes? But, you know, here's the thing. I mean, if this story is serious and you really believe it, do you think about what this is all about? Even if this is just a reflection of the whole thing, that the infinite God came down and he was dependent on, Mary looks pretty good. I'm sure she's a good mom, and Joseph was a good dad. he was willing to come down, and he was dependent upon human beings to take care of him and to nurture him and care for him. Whoa, I mean, can you get your hands around what God was willing to do to come down and enter into life on the most basic, nitty-gritty levels of what all of us have experienced in life. You know, and also when you do that, I told you, you become susceptible to being wounded or hurt. And Jesus did this not only emotionally, but physically. He became vulnerable, didn't he? And he experienced great pain because he was willing to become vulnerable. Here's the thing about vulnerability. Some of you guys, I wasn't old enough to remember this, but some of you were, that Kitty Genovese, in 1964, the story goes like this. So she lives in the Kew Gardens, which is an area of Queens in New York. And I talked to a guy after first service who lived in the Kew Gardens as a seven-year-old, was alive when this took place. So Kitty Genovese is coming home late one night, and an assailant attacks her in the alley leading between the apartments where she lived. The New York Times says that 34 different people, witnesses, accounted that they heard or saw, lights went on, faces were seen in windows. She's screaming for help because she's being physically attacked. Screaming for help. The assailant sees the lights go on, sees faces in the windows. He's sure someone's going to come down and leaves. And what ends up happening? Nobody comes down, and 5 minutes later, he comes back and he finishes her off. He kills her. And from a distance, we could stand here and go, can you believe that people would do that? But, I mean, you understand why people didn't, right? Because people knew, they saw, and they were hoping somebody else would reply to the screams, not themselves, because they didn't want to become vulnerable to being physically harmed themselves. See, God heard our screams for help, and he didn't wait for someone else to fix the problem, even if it meant becoming vulnerable to do something about it himself. He came down in a way that's way more powerful than coming down to stop an assailant in the street, didn't he? Totally vulnerable. I mean, do you see how when you talk about how much God loves us, and we talk about what was God willing to do to express his love for us, and you really consider this story, you can't help but go, whoa, that's amazing. We talk about the gift that Christmas is. We start to recognize and see, wow, God did something unbelievable in the incarnation of coming down to earth through a little baby. And that little baby means so much when we think about it in the totality of what it is. And see, here's the thing about this. Since Jesus experienced all of life the way you and I do, he's really sympathetic to what life is like. So when you cry out to him, you're not crying out to someone with deaf ears. I've talked to people and they've come to me and they've said, Noah, how can God love me? I'm experiencing this pain at the hands of other people unjustly. Why won't God come and deliver me? Why is he standing aloof and ignoring my cry, my plea for help? And sometimes I've taken the Bible and I've opened it up, and I've read to him the story of what Jesus in the garden prayed. Father, if there's another way to get this whole thing done, let this cup pass from me. Spare me the death that I'm about to face. He fully knew what was going to happen. He knew the physical pain that he was about to endure. And not only the physical pain, but what that meant in terms of his separation, carrying the burden of sin of the world on his shoulders, willing to say, I don't know what it's like to have this gap between me and the Father. What's this all? Help me out here. Is there something else we can do here? So that sounds like a pretty... I mean, why wouldn't God answer that prayer? And so when people say to me, you know, I've got a just cause and God doesn't hear me. He passed over my plea for help. Guess what? God knows what it's like in all situations. We don't have a God that just stands aloof and sends somebody else to intervene in the problem. He came down and he entered into it himself and was willing to go through all that it meant to be human and all suffer all the injustices and the pain and the disappointment and frustration that all of us have ever experienced. So you know when you talk to God, you're talking to someone who really is sympathetic and knows all that it means to be human. The next thing John tells us, the closing thing, is he said that Jesus made his home among us. And I mean, that would be enough, right? Well, we already talked about the infinite God coming down and living among us. But there's sort of like this, there's this layer underneath what John tells us here. And you don't really appreciate it in our English Bibles, but if you read this in the Greek, the word home there, it's not like dwell, like in the house next door to you. It's the word that he uses for a tent. And it's a specific tent. It's the word tabernacle. And if you know the Bible at all, you know the story in the Old Testament where the Israelites, don't check out on me. I know some of you are going, oh gosh, not this now. Follow me, I'm almost done here. Come on. I get a half an hour, but you're the last group, so I'm just going to go on and on. So it's this word tabernacle. It's a tent. And the picture is that, you know, the Israelites are they're in bondage in Egypt, and God delivers them out of Egypt, and they're going to the promised land, the place of Israel is today. And he doesn't just send them by themselves, but he goes with them. But because God is not in a human form, his glory, all that it means to be God, or the awesomeness of him, is represented, you know, by this pillar of smoke and fire when it moves. And when they stop and they camp, it's a tent. And the tent is the tabernacle. And so John says, yeah, follow me here. It's kind of deep, but I know you can all get this. John says Jesus tabernacled among us. What would that have meant to the Jewish audience? It would have meant a couple of things, and two things in specific. First thing it would have meant is they all would have understood, the tabernacle is the place where all of God's glory dwelt and moved along with them. And so they would have understood, are you telling us that all that it meant to be God was embodied in the person of Jesus? Yes, that's what John is saying. All that it means, all that God is, all who he is, we can see in the person of Jesus. That's what John is trying to remind us of. And the second thing, along with the glory living in the tabernacle, was this, is the people, in order to make right their wrongs, atone for their sins, they would go to the tent, and that's where they'd offer their sacrifices. So if you lived back, if you know, they would have understood this picture. Tabernacle, the place where God's glory dwelt, but it's also the place where you would go to receive. You get it? Some people, come on, I see some lights going on. It's the place where people would go to receive forgiveness for their sins. The tabernacle. John is saying, if you want to understand and receive forgiveness, there's a place you go, but it's not a tent anymore. Where is that? Wow. So when we talk about the gift of Christmas and what God has done for us, John lays out this beautiful, amazing picture of all that God has done for us. It started as a baby, but it's that baby is amazing in all that the Christmas story represents. There's this great story, and I'll just close with this. Great story this retired British pastor tells about a fictional account of a Roman who lives next door to a Christian. And I've told you this a couple months ago, this story. I think it illustrates so well what happens when we really enter into the Christmas story and appreciate it for what it is. The Roman who doesn't, you know, who is fully religious and understands there's a million gods and there's all these temples and all these different philosophies about what life is supposed to be about, he comes and he's interested. He wants to find out what this Christianity thing is about. So he comes and he asks his neighbor, so you're a Christian. So where's your temple? And everybody, all religions, they all had temples. And the temple was, it stood for the grandeur of what you were worshiping. They built these beautiful, ornate, incredible places. Each religious sect trying to one-up the other one by making a more impressive place. And the Christian said to his neighbor, he said, well, we don't really have a temple that we worship at because God is not, he's not embodied in any one place. The God who made all of this whole place is his temple, and he now dwells in the people that follow him. And the Roman's like, whoa, that's different. And the Roman said, well, surely you've got priests, because every religion's got priests. And the priests would offer sacrifices and curry favor with their gods. To, you know, if you wanted something, you needed to go to the gods and make them happy, offer sacrifices, get them on your sides. And so the Roman, he's asking the Christian, he says, well, where's your priest? Where do you offer your sacrifices? The Christian would say, we don't really have any priests. Because Jesus is the one who intercedes and interceded between us and God. So there is no person that does that for us anymore. And in fact, Jesus' one sacrifice satisfied any kind of thing that God would ask us for. And so the Roman would have been like, well, this is crazy. See, understand this from our perspective today. All other religions, they've got a system of laws, do's and don'ts. And in order to appease, make happy, be in good with the gods, you do that list of things, don't you? And do you see how Christianity has flipped that? See, Christianity doesn't say whatever you do, or doesn't give you a list of rights and wrongs and say, obey all these things and God will be happy with you. What got us in good with God? Is it anything you do? See, that's the thing about Christianity. Christianity is not, it does away with religion. You can't please God from all your good stuff. We become acceptable to God because of what Jesus did. Hey, easy with the, I know you're excited, Jim, but easy with the glasses there. We become acceptable to God because of what Jesus did on our behalf. That's how we can enter into a relationship with God. It's not about a religion. It's not about following a set of rules of rights and wrongs. And when you do those things, God's happy with you. You know, I mean, believe it or not, if you don't come back to church on Sunday, God isn't going to love you any less. And you're not going to be in any more good favors with God just because you come to church on Sunday. It's not about rules or regulations. That's the whole thing, that God entered into this creation because he made us for a relationship with him. And we enter into that relationship because of what Jesus did for us, not because of any good things that we do that earn God's favor. See, here's my sort of my contention with this whole thing. I told you at the beginning, when you're young, you're Christmas, you're excited because you're ready to receive and get. And I think the older we get, we become less willing to receive. And see, here's what I think what kind of happens sometimes is the Christmas story, we come back, you know, December, and we need to kind of gin up the whole I'll be excited about Christmas thing. And we come, oh, it's about the stars and Jesus, the manger. And that's where it stops. It's about this little nativity scene. And see, if Christmas is a gift has to be received. You will never enjoy or get what Christmas is all about if you just come and you hold it at arm's length, oh, that's Christmas. If you don't receive what God has offered us through the person of Jesus Christ, Jesus came so that we could fully enter into a relationship with God the way he designed us to live. And see, that's why it's a gift. Because when you really embrace that, it becomes not about a one-time of event year. I mean, look, anybody, we all appreciate Christmas. It's a wonderful thing. It's a good reminder of all this. But see, Christmas is something, what God did for us, the gift he gave us, it's supposed to shape all of our life. Do you know that's why I come to Sierra Community Church? Not because I'm a pastor. If I wasn't a pastor here, I'd still come here. Why? Because that is what we do as a group of people, isn't it? That come here on a regular basis. We talk about what God has done for us. And we're always thinking more about that gift and what it means, how it shapes our lives, the choices we make, how we interact with God and with other people. And it extends beyond what we do here on Sunday, isn't it? That's why I have the relationships with the people I have here, because we're always talking, celebrating, examining, thinking, trying to appropriate more of that good gift that God gave us into our lives, not just a few days of the year, but all season long. Really, I hope that you guys will, like I'm trying to be, not be old and just focused on giving and telling, but being willing to receive, especially the good gift that God has for each of us. God bless you and have a great Christmas. Merry Christmas, everybody. If our ushers will come forward, we'll continue our worship with our offering. Have a great time with your families tomorrow, guys. Merry Christmas.